Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. All right, so this summer wasn't so great for movies. But summer is over, fall is upon us, so is a new crop of movies. And critics are saying there's a lot to love. Good movies for this season. Stories of wizards and aliens, rebellion and social change, and ethereal musical. This hour on Point, what to see on the silver screen this fall. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you plugged into Moonlight, Arrival, Nocturnal Animals, La La Land? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got two great movie watchers and critics with us today from Baltimore. Anne Hornaday joins us, senior film critic at the Washington Post, Pulitzer Prize finalist for criticism. Anne, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
And from Los Angeles, Gray Drake is with us, senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes. Gray Drake, welcome back to you as well. Wonderful to have you.
Hi, Tom.
Can we dive right in? Well, okay, we'll take a moment and mourn the summer. Are you in agreement with all the critics I'm reading who say the summer was really especially lousy, or was it just a regular summer drill, Gray?
Well, you know what? In order to be really satisfied by the movies this summer, you had to go to the art house theaters because our big releases were, as you're saying, incredibly disappointing. But I'll tell you what, we had films like Hell or High Water and Don't Think Twice that were spectacular.
And does it get better with the big releases this fall?
First, I want to just agree with Gray, and I would toss Captain Fantastic into that mix. That was a real gem over the summer. So it wasn't all gloom and doom. And there were some terrific docs. You know, summer's turned into kind of a great season for documentaries to counter-program all those big blockbusters. But no, the fall really is looking terrific, mostly, I think, just because in looking at kind of the next few months, it's the return to a well-balanced diet. I mean, if you look at cinema is kind of an ecology. What you want is just a little bit of everything, something to please all tastes. And I really feel like this season has that.
I guess I should ask as well. I'll ask both of you how you see this. Or maybe the numbers are just clear. Are people still going to the cinema, to the movie theater, in the kind of numbers they used to? Or is everybody now waiting and watching at home, I don't know, on a laptop sprawled on the couch, Gray?
Well, they're certainly skewing towards staying in their jammies and in their house because, you know, there's a lot involved with going out, including cost and other people and their lack of good behavior in the movie theater. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see those numbers sliding even more than we already have because, I mean, listen, you can't beat being at home eating your good old TV dinner in the privacy of your own home.
I guess, but it's not the big screen. It's not that amazing sense of being in a darkened theater when it's great. It's pretty great. What do the numbers look like, Anne?
Well, you know, I'm caught a little bit flat-footed. I can't quote them directly, but my sense is that, you know, that attendance, you know, raw attendance figures are down, but the box office is kind of holding steady. So
okay.
I think, you know, it's kind of a it's always a little bit ambiguous in terms of you know, the actual sheer numbers of backsides in seats. But like Gray said, I mean, I think the trend line is definitely heading only in one direction. And you know, part of what we're seeing, there are a few that are coming out this fall and winter that are trying to return to that kind of wonderful age of spectacle where you really must see it on the big screen. And I think that's terrific to give people, you know, I mean, it's true that comfort and convenience count. But like you said, there is nothing that really beats the immersive experience of seeing something on a big screen with lots of people in the dark.
I mean, I ask, Anne, because I wonder when we're talking about things that are coming out right now or in the coming weeks and months, if there are a lot of people who just no longer see things when they're running in the cinema and just wait until they come onto, you know, they're available digitally, or are things coming available more quickly digitally? Can you see the season's films without going to a theater?
Well, I think that varies case to case. I mean, I think there are certain films and certain studios that have narrowed that window between theatrical release mm-hmm. And a demand, an on-demand option. I mean, certainly with players like Amazon and Netflix becoming much more powerful in the market, you know, they're playing with that window. I think it's a real question of scale and appropriateness to each and every movie in terms of what the aesthetic values are that lend it to either a big screen experience or a small screen experience, and just to make sure you're not compromising it.
Well, let's dive into what is coming out, because you've each given us a list of movies that you're anticipating favorably this fall, and I want to talk about a lot of those with you. Let's dive in first to the ones that are on both of your lists. And one that I'm looking at right away here, Gray, is Manchester by the Sea. Tell us about director, star. Tell us about the movie.
Well, Casey Affleck is in this film about a man who – there's a lot of mystery in the beginning of the film. Part of the beauty of Manchester by the Sea is seeing the unfolding of information. And back on the East Coast, he has to return back to his home. We're not sure why he left. But what ends up being revealed is that he's left this place for a reason, but he's forced to come back. And the film itself is such an amazing slice of life. It's like watching slightly more than 2 hours as a fly on the wall of this man's life. His acting performance is absolutely spectacular. And I got to see the movie at the Toronto Film Festival and was bawling into my coffee.
Wow. Wow. I only have sound from the trailer here, but let's listen a little bit. This is Casey Affleck starring as Lee Chandler in Manchester by the Sea. After his brother's death, his character learns that he's the sole guardian of his teenage nephew, Patrick, played here by Lucas Hedges. Here's a bit from the trailer from Manchester by the Sea.
What happened to my brother? I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well, your brother provided for your nephew's upkeep. I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look.
I'm just a backup.
Lee, nobody can appreciate what you've been through. And if you really feel you can't take this on, yeah, that's your right.
Where are we going, to the orphanage?
Shut up. Get in the car.
Can't obey your orders until you unlock the door.
Where are we going, the orphanage? Shut up, get in the car. what about the star here and the director? Is this in line with what we've seen before or something new?
Oh, yes. This is from the writer-director Kenneth Lonergan, who did the just superb 2007 film You Can Count on Me with Mark Ruffalo and Laura Linney. Just a beautifully toned, beautifully modulated brother-sister drama. And he brings the same exact chops to this in terms of just observing human relationships, understanding the way people talk and relate to one another. I mean, I can't think of a writer with a better ear for dialogue right now in terms of just the stuff that comes out of these people's mouths feels so spontaneous, so fresh, and so honest. You cannot believe that it started as ink on a page. And like Grace said, the structure of this film is really what I think sort of vaunts it ahead in terms of Lonergan's skills as a director. I mean, he's a playwright, so obviously he's a great writer. But, you know, he's been finding his way as a director and I think gaining more confidence and thinking more in visual terms and more in structural and editing terms. And this film really unfolds like a piece of origami in terms of the way that it just gently doles out the information about Lee and his story and his family. It's just exquisite. And like Grace said, I mean – you know, I'm not a crier. I mean, I don't go out looking for chances to cry. You know, life's hard enough, but there really isn't anything more cathartic than a great cry in a movie that has completely earned it. And this is that movie. It's just wonderful on
Manchester,
every level.
Manchester by the Sea. Of course, that's a real address. That's a real town just up the up the coast from where I'm sitting right now. And beautiful. Also, sort of a fishing tradition there. And
yes.
He's in from a working class family there. It's got some very ritzy stuff, too. Forced to deal
but
with
it's
his
a very
past.
Working. Yeah. And it's a beautiful scenery, by the way, too. It's just beautiful looking.
What made you cry, Greg, without giving away the movie? What is it about Manchester by the Sea that got you so deeply?
One of the things that really struck me is just that even though the situations in the film and what the characters are going through is different from anything I've experienced, I could see my life reflected in parts of them. And this movie, it leaves so much open for interpretation, and it just allows you to be an intelligent viewer that, boy, my emotions just all bubbled up to the surface because the things that Casey Affleck's character has been through and are just unbelievable. They're so painful, and he's just – it's all in his eyes, Tom. I'm dying even talking about it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Manchester.
And a shout-out to Michelle Williams, by the way, who has a relatively
–
in terms of screen time –
his wife. He's separated from her –
There is a scene that, you know, and again, we don't want to – I just don't want to say almost anything about the actual plot just because the unfolding of it is the movie. So you really want to stay away from who people are and what they are to each other. But they have a scene that is just one of the great – I think one of the great masterpieces of cinema acting. I mean, it's up there with Marlon Brando and Ava Marie Saint and On the Waterfront, you know, just of a two-hander, you know, this two-person scene that is absolutely magnificent.
Did you know that Casey Affleck had it in him? Had you seen it before, Ann?
I've always felt, yes. I mean, I'm a huge fan of his. I've always thought he was terrific. But it's just great to see him come into his own in a film, you know, where he really can. He's in pretty much every single scene with very few exceptions. And again, you know, just as it, I think, represents a leap forward for Lonergan as a filmmaker, it's a leap forward for Casey Affleck just in terms of getting the attention I think that he's deserved and the kind of role that he deserves.
Gray, does Brother Ben need to up his game here? Casey's on his on the case.
You guys, the Afflecks are having a spectacular year because Ben Affleck has The Accountant coming out. And without saying too much about that, 2016 could very well be the year of the Affleck.
Wow. It's the season. We're in
That's
the year, maybe the year of the Affleck. Gray Drake with Rotten Tomatoes with us from Los Angeles, and Ann Hornaday with The Washington Post, chief film critic there. It's great to have you both with us. We are looking at the big fall and year-end movies of 2016. Coming out right now and coming out right through the end of the year. Behind us here, Justin Timberlake, featured in DreamWorks' upcoming animation, Trolls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Nothing I can see but you when you dance, dance, dance. Feel a good creeping up on you, so just dance, dance, dance. Come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing.
I can't stop the feeling.
So just dance.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big fall and year-end movies of 2016. Critics, including my guest today, Gray Drake of Rotten Tomatoes, and Ann Hornaday, chief film critic of The Washington Post, say we have a very good season coming. You can join us this hour. Are you reading about Moonlight and Drug War in Miami? Will you be there for La La Land with Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, for Manchester by the Sea with Casey Affleck? Are you taking your book club to see The Girl on the Train? What are you anticipating this fall from the theaters? Gray Drake's with us from Los Angeles and Hornaday from Baltimore today. Here's a little bit from the trailer of Nocturnal Animals. Stars Amy Adams as Susan Morrow, an art gallery owner, haunted by her ex-husband's novel. Here's a little bit.
My ex-husband used to call me a nocturnal animal.
I didn't know you had an ex-husband.
I've been thinking about him a lot lately. And then recently he sent me this book that he's written. It's violent and it's sad. And he dedicated it to me.
Did you love him?
I did something horrible to him.
Nobody gets away with what you did. Nobody.
Okay, Gray, Ann, I can't tell from the little blurb if this is a horror film. I mean, she's a L.A. art gallery owners, kind of idyllic life, but her handsome second husband is traveling all the time. She gets a manuscript written by her first husband. She hasn't seen him in years. It tells the story of a teacher who finds a trip with his family turning into a nightmare. Anne, is this a horror film? What is it?
Well, it's kind of a mashup. I mean, there are horror elements to it and thrill. I would probably, if I were to reduce it to a genre, I'd say it's an erotic thriller. In terms of there is a very violent thriller in that story within a story, which she is imagining and which is enacted on screen. And then there's this kind of sleek, stylish drama, contemporary marriage drama wrapped around it. Amy Adams, as you said, is in it, and Jake Gyllenhaal and Armie Hammer. Mm-hmm. It's been directed by Tom Ford, you know, the fashion designer,
yes,
who I thought made an incredibly impressive directing debut with A Single Man with Colin Firth, which mm-hmm. I found really moving. And, of course, visually, you know, it's not a surprise that visually he's a stunning stylist. This movie left me cold, to be honest with you. I think it was pretty popular up in Toronto, which I attended, as well as Gray. And I got the sense that most of my colleagues admired it a lot more than I did.
Gray, what do you say? How did it hit you? And what about Tom Ford, the fashion designer, and his move over into film direction?
Well, I agree with you, Anne. I really, really loved A Single Man. And I have yet to see this one. But the reason that I'm excited is because the only adjective that could improve the word thriller is erotic. And I just can't wait to see it, because the pairing of Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal to me is going to be really fascinating to watch. And Nocturnal Animals also marks an interesting trend in the fall, which is the Amy Adams reading series.
Meaning? What do you mean?
She is, you know, reading this novel in Nocturnal Animals, but she's also in the film Arrival, where she plays a linguistics professor, and it's very she's saving the world with her literacy.
Isn't that great?
Arrival. Let's turn there. Okay, we've got an erotic thriller in Nocturnal Animals. Arrival is on both of your lists as well. What is it, Gray?
Well, aliens have landed here. So in that premise alone, we've seen it a million times. But what seems great about this movie is that it's a real thinker. Amy Adams has been called in because she is one of the foremost experts in her field, because no one knows how to communicate with these aliens. They are all over the planet.
Oh my gosh.
And so the trailer has led me to believe that this is a movie that's going to unfold over the course of time, much like I mentioned Manchester by the Sea mm-hmm. does in a way. And it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, who has also done Prisoners. He's a very interesting director, and you can never – it's never just face value with this guy. I love him.
Mysterious spacecraft touching down around the globe. Amy Adams plays Dr. Louise Banks in Arrival. She's a linguist. She's been recruited by the military to assist in translating alien communication. Here's from the trailer, Arrival.
More objects have landed around the world.
This is one of 12.
I'm never going to be able to speak their words.
Got 2 days. Figure something out.
I am human. It's their language.
What do you say, Anne Hornaday?
Oh, I thought I was very impressed with this, and I agree with Gray. I think Villeneuve is a terrific director. He really knows how to speak cinematically and how to execute these ideas in a very striking visual way. It's also, you're right, it's the Amy Adams reading season. It's also sad Amy Adams season, because she's sad in this one too.
Oh boy.
And there is a mystery at its core that unfolds in a really fascinating way that, for many viewers, again, I saw this in Toronto, it just... This will also, I think, reduce a lot of people to puddles. I mean, there's this very emotional core of loss and that I think will really hit home, that kind of elevates it. I mean, it's a very skillful, adroit genre exercise as a sci-fi film, which is great, and that's always fun. But there is this kind of underlying, there's another layer there that I think gives it some ballast and some depth and meaning that people will appreciate.
Amy Adams in Sci-Fi in Arrival. We're looking at big fall films, good fall films, 2016 and on into the years, and the sort of awards season with Anne Hornaday of The Washington Post, Gray Drake of Rotten Tomatoes. And we have callers for the two of you. Emilio is calling from Oklahoma City. Emilio, thank you very much for calling. What are you anticipating? What are you looking forward to?
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
This week I saw the first trailer for the film Fences, starring Denzel Washington and Viola Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing that trailer it just gave me goosebumps, because it's basically Denzel's character talking to his son and giving this really stirring monologue, and just getting that same feeling that I got for this trailer that I got last year after seeing the trailer for Spotlight. And I told my friends, I was like, Spotlight's going to be this big, major Oscar contender, even before seeing the film. And as we know, it went on to win the Best Picture Oscar. And so just getting that same feeling that this is going to be a major player come Oscar season for Denzel and for Viola Davis.
Yeah.
And I think I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really, really well.
Amelia, I'm very glad you raised it from Oklahoma City there. Of course, this is the Fences is the film adaptation, and I want to ask how they do that, of August Wilson's 10-play cycle, chronicling the black experience in 20th century America. I'm seeing headlines here saying it's the season of the not-so-white Hollywood this fall and beyond. Let's listen to a little bit of the this is a clip from the trailer of Fences. Opens Christmas Day, stars Denzel Washington, Viola Davis, but Denzel as Troy. And in this clip from the trailer, Troy answers his son's question.
How come you ain't never like me?
Like you? What law is there say I got to like you?
None.
All right, then. Don't you eat every day? Answer me when I talk to you. Don't you eat every day?
Yeah.
As long as you in my house, you put a sir on the end of it when you talk to me.
Yes, sir.
You eat every day.
Yes, sir.
Got a roof over your head.
Yes, sir.
Got clothes on your back.
Yes, sir.
Why you think that is?
Because of you.
Hell, I know it's because of me. But why do you think that is?
Because you like me?
Like you.
Like you. Well, maybe, maybe not. Anne, how do they take a 10-play cycle and make one movie out of with Fences?
You know what? I have no idea. And I'm coming into this. I don't think anyone has seen this one yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anyone who isn't champing at the bit to see it. And I'm with Emilio. I think I tend to stay away from trailers because I like to kind of come to things as fresh as I can. Mm-hmm. But even just listening to Emilio talk about it, just I think, you know, the combination of Denzel Washington, who, by the way, is in this new iteration of Magnificent Seven, which has just done gangbusters, largely thanks to him. I mean, he's really one of, you know, we see some speculations that the era of the big movie star is over and that stars don't, you know, put people in seats anymore. But he's really one of the few that still can. And he just commands the screen like no other. So even just from that audio clip, you can you sort of snap too. So I just cannot wait for this.
What do you know about Fences, Gray?
Well, I know that word on the street is that Viola Davis is going to be a competitor in the very crowded Best Actress category. It's already being called by people sight unseen. So however fair that is, I mean, she's always amazing to watch. And I think some of the strong suits that Fences has on its side so far is that Denzel Washington is also directing it. So this will be his, you know, this will be his third, I think, third or fourth feature that he's directed. And to answer your previous question, I think one of the ways that 10 plays might be condensed well is by having the playwright do the screenplay as well, so which has happened with August Wilson. So hopefully knowing his own material that much and that well would make for a great film.
August Wilson, of course, much, much and long celebrated playwright now with the Fences, his 10-play cycle. Sort of pulling it all together on the big screen, Fences with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis. Lots of anticipation there. What about this? The headlines I'm reading saying we've got a lot more diversity on the screen this fall and maybe coming up in the Oscars this year, Gray.
Good. Finally. Love it. That means that a couple of years ago, the tide started to turn. The movies went into production. They're being made now. And I think that it just stands to reason that to have an interesting, stimulating bunch of things to see, you need a lot of different people making movies, starring in films, and also voting on them. So everything is going the way that it should, albeit not as fast for most of our tastes. But I feel positive about this, and I'm glad that that's the trend.
Another in that category that we hear a lot about is Moonlight. Tells the story of a young gay man, young black lead, coming of age in Miami. Trevante Rhodes plays Chiron in the drug war of Miami. Here's a little bit from the trailer of Moonlight.
Who is you, Chiron?
I'm all the time trying not to remember. Trying to forget all those times.
At some point, you got to decide for yourself who you want to be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
Anne, what can you tell us about the setting, the story of Moonlight?
This is a really beguiling film by the director, Barry Jenkins, who had a movie at Toronto in 2009 called Medicine for Melancholy that just utterly beguiled me at the time. It was sort of a gentle romantic comedy slash drama. This is his first film since then, and I've just been waiting on tenterhooks for his next movie, and here it is. And it's an interesting, it's sort of a triptych because this character that he follows is played by three different actors at three different stages of his life. And you sort of see him coming to terms with his identity and his sexual identity and his identity as a man and as a son and as a friend and all sorts of different permutations. And it's very quiet. It's very reflective and contemplative. It's not, I wouldn't call it like a traditional narrative, but it's a very classical narrative and very poetic in terms of its visual sensibility and its sort of philosophical sensibility. So it's just a lovely movie that I think, to Gray's point, you know, we want diversity in all the senses of that word, including tone and including subject matter. And this sort of fulfills all of those wants and hungers with the audience, I think.
Moonlight delivering. We're looking at the pretty good raft of films coming out in the fall of 2016. Is Miami important as the setting for Moonlight, Anne?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I didn't think of it necessarily as such a Miami story. I mean, it's very vividly depicted. It's certainly a movie of its place. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you're assessing a film, specificity is always really important. And that often is a function of the screenplay, but that's ultimately the director. You know, it's in his hands or her hands to make sure that something is as specific and as vivid and vibrant as it possibly can be. And I think, but you know, not being familiar with Miami, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if
Miami
Floridians feel an extra affinity for it.
We'll pay attention. A lot of Floridians yes. listening right here will pay attention. Greeley, Colorado. Annalisa is calling. Annalisa, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling to share the movie that I'm really excited for this fall, and that happens to be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them opens November 18th. Annalisa in Colorado can't wait. And Annalisa, why are you interested in this one?
I'm really excited for this because I am a child of the Harry Potter generation. It came out when I was 11 years old, and so a continuation of that universe is just really, really exciting. And it's really going to be fun to see how they take what is a textbook in the Harry Potter universe and turn it into a movie.
Annalisa, appreciate your call. Gray, this is J.K. Rowling sort of jumping the pond and bringing the Harry Potter genre into New York City. Is it the Harry Potter story? What is it?
Oh, listen, I share Annalisa's excitement because J.K. Rowling has written this screenplay, which is a first for her. And as she mentioned, this is just a textbook that has a whole bunch of beasts in it. There's no story, which means that for once we'll be watching a Harry Potter movie from that universe without immediately comparing it to the text. And so we'll be able to discover it. That makes me feel like I might be able to watch this like a kid, you know, and just be excited.
Is it all the wizards suddenly showing up in Manhattan? Is that the deal or something else?
Well, what happened? Eddie Redmayne stars as Newt Scamander, and he has been expelled from Hogwarts.
The year is 1926, I read here.
Correct. So wizards are the only ones that can make booze appear.
Booze? Like alcohol? Liquor?
It's a prohibition joke, guys.
Okay. Boo!
And so Eddie Redmayne's character has this briefcase with him that's filled with his fantastic beasts. And wouldn't you know, it gets opened, the beasts escape, and he has to go all over New York City in the 20s getting them back. And it sounds fun. It's directed by David Yates, who's responsible for the last few movies in the Harry Potter series that he did a bang-up job on. And I think this whole thing is going to be fun and wonderful.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. J.K. Rowling comes to America. Here's a bit from the trailer.
Yesterday, a wizard entered New York with a case full of magical creatures. And unfortunately, some have escaped.
We're going to recapture my creatures before they get hurt. They're currently in alien terrain, surrounded by millions of the most vicious creatures on the planet.
Humans.
Oh boy, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the sort of Harry Potter thing, J.K. Rowling anyway, comes to America. Anne, have you seen any of it? Are you looking forward to it?
No, I haven't seen anything of it, and I cannot tell a lie. I'm not a Potter person, so
okay.
I'm
right.
going to defer to Gray and all of those good people out there who are excited for Harry Potter and wish them the best.
Potter people, bring it on. The Fools Who Dream behind us here from La La Land, a musical starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're looking at the big fall and year-end movies with Anne Hornaday, chief film critic of The Washington Post, Gray Drake from Rotten Tomatoes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Here's to the ones who dream, foolish as they may seem. Here's to the hearts that ache. Here's to the mess we make.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big fall and year-end movies of 2016. Critics say we've got a good season coming, including the critics with us right here today. Anne Hornaday is chief film critic at The Washington Post. She's with us. Gray Drake, senior editor at Rotten Tomatoes, is with us from Los Angeles. You can join us as well. What are you looking forward to this fall? What do you want from a great film these days? And are you glad for the diversity of race and sexuality in the fall lineup? Are you ready to get with J.K. Rowling? We just heard about Fantastic Beasts and her Wizards in New York City. Are you ready to roll with our critics here? Lots of callers for the two of you, Gray and Anne. Bill in Beverly, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had the chance to see La La Land a couple of weeks ago and liked it very much. And I'm just wondering what your guests think how the mass audience will react to a musical here in 2016.
Yeah, La La Land. Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone. Gray, can you describe this to us? What's the setting? What's the story? And a musical?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Directed by Damien Chazelle, who did Whiplash, this guy has managed to make two movies about jazz. Who is he? And the genius that comes from this man is amazing. So the way it plays into La La Land is that Ryan Gosling is a jazz pianist. Emma Stone is an actress. They live in Los Angeles. Obviously, I'm a little prejudiced in that regard.
Okay.
Los Angeles ends up feeling like a character. It's one of those movies that's very rich in location. And darned if these kids just aren't singing and dancing around the town and just feeling all their feelings together. I think the best part about the film is that, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are both incredibly talented actors, singers, and dancers. But the movie doesn't come off feeling like a polished, you know, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musical of old. It's a lot more, I think, of the modern age. So to answer Bill's question, I think that audiences are going to be able to accept it just a little bit more. It feels a little bit unpolished in a way while still being...
How does that work? Do they break into song in the same way as Fred Astaire and others used to? Or is there some different rhythm to dialogue and, hey, now we're singing?
Yeah, they're definitely playing into the jazz element of the storyline, and it does, it feels a lot more natural. The songs do come out of nowhere because it is a musical, but those two manage to turn it into a very natural thing. Like you and I might just start singing right now.
Yeah, we might.
And
we might. We really might. Or we might.
And
not.
Aren't you charming, Tom?
Oh, Gray, stop. What do you think, Anne Hornaday? La La Land.
Oh, God. I was utterly bewitched by this movie. And I, to Bill's point, I really hope people do make the leap. I wonder if I have not been watching. I don't get a chance to see much TV, but I wonder if things like My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, you know, which also is bringing the sort of resuscitating the musical form. I wonder if it's tapping into some collective readiness for this. But I really do hope that Stone and Gosling's fan bases, and they do have really strong fan bases, especially Ryan Gosling. I just hope that they'll turn out in droves to see them because they have rarely been just so attractive and charming. And to Gray's point, you know, the music is integrated, I thought, very smoothly with the narrative. So it doesn't feel forced or kind of look at me, ma. You know, it's it's very easy and at ease with itself. But there are some very heavily stylized sequences as well, especially toward the end. And this is another one, I got to tell you. It's going to reduce you to – you just bring the Kleenex, people.
Wow.
I'm just saying, buy a few extra boxes in the next few months because everything is just so emotional.
It's
or
true.
Maybe it's me.
No, it isn't just you. Don't you worry, because in the fall, I highly recommend people just preemptively hydrate.
Just load up. So those tears will roll like the Mississippi. Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, it's La cleansing. La Land. Dreams they work so hard to maintain in each other threaten to rip them apart. And yes, they break into song. Michael in Lexington, Kentucky. Michael, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Hi, Michael. You're on.
And he just voice commands while driving.
Oh, boy. We're in the middle of something there.
Hey, she's in my car.
Michael, take it easy. I don't want you to get in trouble there with your car. Let me go to another call, if I may. Sorry, Michael. But Jay in Chesapeake, Virginia. Jay, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. What a coincidence. I just saw Whiplash for like the fourth time this week.
This is the great drummer. We had Damien Chazelle on when that movie came out. Wasn't that something else? The kid and the drums, amazing.
I tell you, after that movie was over with, you just sit there, your pulse is just pounding,
yeah.
And you go, what did I just watch?
Yes.
And how can I get more?
Yeah.
And like I said, I just watched Crazy Stupid Love for like the eighth time. That scene between Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling when she marches into that bar and kisses him is just, it gets me every time. But the reason I called was,
yeah,
my favorite movie are those based on life. And just recently we've had, Snowden, and we've had the Miracle on the Hudson. And today is the Queen of Katwa. I hope I'm saying that right.
Mm,
and
Katwa, yeah.
So my question is, how many more movies based on true life do you see coming before the end of the year? And are any of those going to be big-time Oscar contenders? And I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer on the radio.
Jay, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Deepwater Horizon, of course, about the oil rig fire explosion collapse that caused so much calamity in the Gulf of Mexico. And Queen of Katwe, this is Mira Nir, story of a chess prodigy in Uganda, I guess also based on a true story. What about those two and other based on real life films that might be coming down the pike? Anne, what do you see?
I do want to recommend both Deepwater Horizon and especially Queen of Katwe, which is just a wonderful, you know, family. I'm kind of an advocate for family films that aren't super icky and over sentimental and cheaply sentimental. And I can't say enough about this movie. It's just wonderful. It's from Disney. It's just take everybody and go. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are some fact-based dramas coming up. One that I'm a huge fan of is called Loving, which is the dramatization of the Richard and Mildred Loving case. Which
this,
made
went before the Supreme Court and Loving versus something made interracial
Virginia.
That's right, made interracial marriage legal ultimately before the Supreme Court.
Exactly, and this has been brought to the screen by a wonderful writer director named Jeff Nichols, who's done smaller films so far. I mean, he did a terrific thriller called Take Shelter. He did a wonderful sort of sci-fi, sort of Spielberg-esque sci-fi movie called. Midnight Special this year. Mm-hmm. He did a terrific movie called Mud. But this is a real leap for him. And again, he's just done a superb job of getting us inside. Rather than make this sort of a polemic or a history lesson or a, you know, making sure everything is really important, he simply lets us into Richard and Mildred Loving's marriage. It's a very intimate, quiet, emotional piece with two fantastic performances from Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga. And so the experience is really a very quietly emotional one rather than a didactic one. And I just think it's a perfect aesthetic choice for this story and deeply, deeply moving, just a wonderful movie. And then a movie I haven't seen but they showed clips of in Toronto called Hidden Figures about a group of African-American women who were instrumental in the NASA program in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And that just looks – the clips they showed looked really, really great. And some wonderful seeming performances from Taraji Henson and Octavia Spencer and Janelle Monáe who sort of stole the show in these clips. So that's coming in January. I believe that's coming in December/January. So.
We talked here with the author of Hidden Figures, and we also look forward to seeing that. I've got a little bit here from the trailer of Loving, of course. This is about the interracial couple who were sentenced to prison in Virginia before the Supreme Court got into this for being married.
In here!
Richie!
What you doing in bed with that woman?
I'm his wife.
That's no good here.
Richard Perry Loving being a white person and Mildred Jeter being a colored person did unlawfully cohabitate as man and wife.
Richard?
It ain't right!
I believe this is a battle that could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
I mean, we ain't hurting anybody.
And yes, it did go all the way to the Supreme Court, and it changed the law of the land, or many states anyway. Now, a motion picture loving, and both of my guests today, Gray Drake and Anne Hornaday, say, look to this one. Birth of a Nation, also. Nate Parker's Birth of a Nation at festivals. A lot of Oscar buzz. And, of course, this goes back to the old Birth of a Nation of long ago, and the story of Nate Turner, who Nate Parker plays. I want to ask you both about this one. Here's a bit from the trailer. Stars Nate Parker as Nat Turner.
Lord spoken to me. Visions of what's to come. A rise of good against evil.
What are we going to do?
We'll fight. But once it begins, our brothers and sisters will join. And we'll number in the hundreds, thousands even.
But the high place of God be on the mouths of the saints and a two-edged sword in their hand to execute vengeance on the demonic nations. Sing to him a new song.
And
we'll
rise up. And, of course, we're talking here about all the way back in the 19th century and the uprising, the rebellion, Nate Turner Rebellion, that became such an important historical fact in American history. Gray, what did you think of the movie?
Well, I have yet to see this one, and it's going to be in theaters very soon. And I can't wait, because ever since Sundance of this year, back in January, everyone has been talking about it. There was a lot of buzz at that festival, and it got one of the highest sales, pardon me, at Sundance ever. It was purchased for $17 million by Fox Searchlight.
Wow.
And if that's not an endorsement, then I don't know what is.
And what do you know of Birth of a Nation this time?
Yes, it's opening on Friday, so it is opening soon, and it's been long awaited. I mean, this is one of those stories that people have wanted to bring to the screen and wanted to see on the screen for a really long time, and it's been Nate Parker's sort of passion project. I mean, he's a relatively young, relatively unknown actor. I mean, those of us in the biz certainly have been watching him over the years, but I don't think he's terribly well known to mass audiences, so it was really sort of an ambitious undertaking on his part to make his writing and directing debut this incredibly, meaningful story. And I think for the most part, it succeeds. I do think it bears some of the marks of a first film. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's perfect in every way. But, you know, like I said, it's a hugely important story for, in terms of our history. And I think it'll be of great interest to audiences.
And what about the calls to boycott here, old rape charges against Nate Parker and Gene Celestine, who co-wrote Birth of a Nation, been brought up, and some people are saying, no, not going to see it. Those I guess, were dropped. This goes all the way up to their college days in a 2001 trial. Is that a real thing, Gray? Are people staying away from this film or intending to because of that? What do you know?
I think that there is a lot of controversy and a lot of strong opinions about, Nate Parker's history, and essentially they brought it up because preemptively they wanted to put it out in the open that this is something that was part of our personal lives. And this is always a really difficult issue in judging someone's art, especially in this day and age when we have so much information available about people. We start to see how fallible they really are, and it's incredibly difficult. I still don't know where I stand on whether or not I should or shouldn't support a piece of art done by someone who may or may not have done something I disagree with. It's really, really tough. And I think that we're going to keep hearing about it. And in fact, I believe it might have hurt this movie's chances to be recognized during awards.
Nate Parker, star of and co-writer of Birth of a Nation. We're looking at big films, good films coming in fall of 2016. Let's get a call from Westport, Maine. Lori, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. It's great to be with you. And I just called to let you know that I saw a fantastic movie called Maudie at the Telluride by the Sea in New Hampshire. And that movie just left you thinking about the simplicity of life, that this woman who was a folk artist in Nova Scotia region, Canada, was a folk artist who had severe arthritis. And it was really a love story that made you really feel for her and the life that she led. It had a lot of really spontaneous, wonderful things that made you think that life could be good for anybody if they simply had a good perspective about the way things are.
Lori, sometimes that's all we have to hang on to, and it can be a lot. I appreciate your call from Maine. Gray Ann, our time grows short. I want to hear what else is on your list that you would direct people toward as they look toward this upcoming season, and what haven't we mentioned that you want people to know about?
Well, there's one movie that I saw at Cannes this year that is just near and dear to my heart, and it's such a quiet movie that I'm afraid it'll get sort of overshadowed in the plethora of things to come. So please, everyone, write down the word Patterson. It's the title of a movie by Jim Jarmusch that is one of the most beautiful movies I've seen all year and in many years. It stars Adam Driver as a bus driver in Patterson, New Jersey. And it's the simple story of his life and his marriage. He's a poet. And so the movie actually sort of involves poetry, both recited and on screen. And it's just the most lyrical, I would even argue spiritual film about love and life and acceptance and beauty. And it's just an exquisite film from Jim Jarmusch, who I think sort of came of age at a time when ironic distance was cool and hip. Mm-hmm. And this is anything but. This is absolutely sincere, and there's not an ounce of irony or cynicism in it. It's just beautiful.
Patterson, you've got me lined up to see it. And Gray, another one or two, our time is short here, that you want to get in people's ear before we sign off.
Well, Anne, you hit the nail on the head with Patterson. It's almost more of a meditation. But speaking of spirituality, I don't want to completely leave the summer behind, so I'll mention that Doctor Strange is coming out with Benedict Cumberbatch. I have nothing but faith in Marvel. I think that he is going to make a superhero movie interesting and worthy of a November release.
Doctor Strange with Benedict Cumberbatch. We know he has his legions who will no doubt come out, whatever the film may be. This has been just great, and you've got me excited to be back in the movie house. And for that, I thank you, because the summer was kind of a drought, and I look forward to something much richer this fall. Gray Drake at Rotten Tomatoes in L.A., thank you very much for being with us, Gray. Just terrific to have you.
Thank you.
And Anne Hornaday, chief film critic for The Washington Post. It's always wonderful to have you in the house, Anne. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
We will take your advice heading into a new season of film. Listeners, thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.